If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these. Or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.
Well, thank you for tuning in to Training and Tactics on RadioFirehouse.com. I'm Douglas Klein. I'm the training commander with the High Point Fire Department, and we look forward to an outstanding show. And if you have any questions or comments you'd like to get on or you'd like to talk about a subject, email us at radiopodcast@firehouse.com, and we'd be glad to, you know, get your topic up and we'll talk about it. Got a great lineup. We're going to talk about training, and we're going to focus in on the volunteer fire training. This podcast, talk about the volunteers across the United States, some of the issues that they're running into as far as, you know, meeting the standards and getting all the training in, and some of the problems that they run up against. And we want to try to answer some of those questions and try to give a couple of ways that training can be done even in a more enhanced setting. Focus in on some of the topics that they really need to be hitting and try to give you some alternative means. We're also going to give you a way to look into your training program just to see how good it's running and see if you can't make it better. So if you're out there, we're going to talk a little bit about some tactics and training, and we're going to combine a pretty healthy show today. Joining me today as a guest, it's an honor and a privilege to have a good cohort of mine on, Philip Russell from down in South Carolina. Philip is the resident training manager for the South Carolina State Fire Training Academy, where they got a phenomenal facility, runs tons and tons of programs, and I get the distinct pleasure of going down and visiting and doing some training with those guys. One of the things about Philip that y'all would like to know is that a large majority of the people that they train is focused in on our volunteers, and our volunteers are that really critical piece in the fire service of the United States. So, Phil, welcome on. Glad to have you on the podcast today.
Doug, thanks a lot for having me. It's definitely an honor, and, of course, it's always fun working with a friend, and I'm looking forward to sitting down and having some good, hearty conversations on fire training and especially how we can relate to volunteers.
All right. Well, we're not going to wait another minute. We're going to dive right into it. And the first thing I got on here is talking about training, and everybody wants to compare volunteers and careers. You know, bottom line, here it is. It's the same fires, it's the same situations, it's the same danger. And people somehow want to put, well, you know, the career guys, you know, they're over here, and their job is much dangerous or more dangerous than the volunteers. With my experience being in both career and volunteer departments, you know, I currently serve as an assistant chief in the Ruffin Volunteer Fire Department, you know, real close to the house, and, you know, I know what a problem it is for the types of responses they run. It's no different. They're up against the same magnitude of problems, sometimes even more so because of resources. So training is a key. So when we talk about training with volunteers, Philip, tell us a little bit about what you think we need to be focusing in on some of the training aspects, and how do we meet this? Some of the problems we know are time constraints.
Well, and let me first off by saying, again, I got my start in a volunteer department. I still volunteer as well, and believe it or not, I'm assistant chief as well, Doug, with the Southside Volunteer Fire Department in Union, South Carolina. And, you know, you're right. What I like about being a volunteer is, there's just so much want to serve in the community. I'm not saying that there's not that same want and desire nationwide for all of our member services, but they do it without pay. We are in a professional organization. I think the way you, if you're going to discriminate, don't discriminate between pay and volunteer. I think you discriminate. We're all volunteer. I mean, we're all professional. The difference is some get paid for it. But you're right. Time constraints are there. We hear them utilized as excuses. We don't have time. We've got family. And I think that's true for everybody. I think that's across the board. But what we have to do with training is realize that we are all combating the same animal. Fire is fire. Hazmat is hazmat. Rescue is rescue. And whether we're responding as a paid or a volunteer, the level of training, the level of professionalism, the way we approach it, it has to be the same. And I think our approach in getting people trained, what we've got to do is look how we can compartmentalize that training, even if, and I hate to use this word, but even piecemeal it in parts and sections and chapters. But the same training has to be given to everybody across the board.
Well, you know, I run into a thought process, and I know that you do this as well, is, you know, trying to get a training program together for, you know, the volunteers is extremely difficult. And, you know, these folks out there know, I mean, it's soccer games, it's football games, it's, you know, go here, go there, and then, you know, you're fitting in, you know, one, two nights a week, a Saturday or Sunday style class, and it's got to be stretched out a little longer, and it's, you know, you really have to focus in on intensity of training.
You know, you do, but I also, really yeah, go ahead, Doug, let's finish up. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Well, you know, knowing your situation there in South Carolina, you run a lot of weekend-style programs, and one that comes to mind is your Southeastern Fire School. When you bring in, you know, some really top-name folks, I know that you got up and coming in March of this year, that same program, and you got Gagliotta coming in from out west doing his program. Tim Sindelbach's going to be in doing his big box stuff. I'm going to be down there with you doing situational awareness utilizing thermal imaging cameras. And you pack in about 600 folks to this, and this is the quality training that they get their hands on. And I know you run a lot of weekend programs and people, you know, floating in and out of the academy as volunteers. You know, what's your thought about trying to power pack, you know, a major training program into a 12, 16-hour program for, you know, volunteers to try to get that information out there?
Well, I think what you got to do first off is you've got to we've got to separate between the basic training and for added additional training. We learned a long time ago that if we want to impact the volunteer and give them that training, we've got to make the basic training. We've got to make it the delivery option to meet that volunteer's need. Now, don't get me wrong. We do plenty of paid firefighters as well. But the thing is every firefighter deserves the same level of training. And you're right, we do an extensive amount of weekend work, evenings, nights. Some of these classes are 80 hours in length. Some of them are 24 hours in length. Some of them are 8. But to be able to deliver them in a manageable way for the volunteer that allows him to get maximum knowledge, but at the same point in time, it allows him to have maximum family time as well. But when you start talking about the big schools, when you start talking about you know, having different opportunities and packing people in, whether it's on our site in Columbia or whether it's at some local fire department in the state, what we have to do is recognize what do we want to cover? What are we having problems with at our department? And then sit down, have a objective written, and find that instructor who can meet those objectives. And, hey, let's make it high impact. Let's make it mean something. Let's let the firefighter walk away and really learn something that they can put in application.
Well, that kind of brings us into a topic that I had a little farther down, but you opened the door, so we're going to walk through it. We're going to talk a little bit about conducting a training needs assessment and creating that change in your training program to bring you quality versus quantity. And I realize we're under the gun with meeting a lot of standards for NFPA, you know, to make sure we're getting the JPRs in that we want, those job performance requirements. There's state standards, there's OSHA guidelines we got to fall in and get, you know, specific training in. And, of course, we throw in the ISO training where there's so much, you know, continual training that has to go on for a year, and that's how you get rated for insurance. But let's look at creating some change and doing a needs assessment. The first thing is where do we start? And that is with a needs assessment. And what you need to be doing in that is where have you been? Where are you now? Where should you be? Where are you going with this?
What direction are we going?
Yeah, where are we going with this? And you got to start at this point with where do we want to end up? Let me get some thoughts from you on this and take a look at where have we been probably over the last 10 years in training, Philip?
Well, I tell you, I see training manifest itself over and over again, and I think what I'm seeing right now, in my opinion, is the need to go back to the basics. We have become a fire service that has become overwhelmed with a lot of tasks and a lot of responsibilities. But if you still go back and take a look at the list of LODDs that we have annually, where are LODDs occurring at? You've got physical fitness first, you've got residential firefighting second, and then we've got driver operations. And I think if we take a look and break it down from that area, okay, first off, let's I don't want to sidestep the physical trait of it. But let's come back to that. Let's take a look at the structural side, basic firefighting, things that we should have learned our first 40 hours, 240 hours, whatever the training program in your area is. I think if you take a look at a basic fire from most of our curricula out there, you're looking at 240 to 300 hours of a basic training program. But when do we go back to it? One of the things that I see, and I know even from a local fire department that I'm on, you know, a lot of times training on that Monday night, you know, let's not pull the hose. We've already got one light off. Let's not pull that second line because we're only going to have to rack it up. Wait a minute. Let's take every opportunity to train. Let's take every opportunity to put an extra few minutes in putting our hands on the hose because it's repetency that makes us good.
Absolutely. And, you know, you present a perfect piece here for what you're looking at is known as a gap analysis. Mm-hmm. And basically what you're trying to do is take a look and determine the current state and skills, the knowledge of your folks, their ability, and, you know, where you're at currently and what it's going to take to get to the future. And one of the things I think is just really necessary in this gap analysis is you got to ask yourself a couple questions. You know, are there problems in the organization which might be solved by training? You hit on something that's very big, and the buzzword you threw out was Dodge. And you think about these reports and walking down these statistics and where we have issues, we know what problems are when it comes to line of duty death. We know what the problems are, what precipitates injury. We know that. And 90% of those are, you know, the inability to focus on detail and focus in on that. And also, it comes down to how well are they trained? You know, how much training have we done? And secondly, if there's problems, are they foreseen due to changes? Can you look forward and see that, hey, we got a lot of changes coming on here, and we got some problems that we need to face because of these changes, and we're going to see this gap grow. What's your thoughts there, Philip?
Well, I think the point that I've got to add to what you're saying, if I go to a fire ground and I've got firefighters who continuously cannot pull that hose off the top of that engine and stretch it out in a straight line and put it to the seat of the fire without tangling it up, without dropping the load, without dropping the whole hose load right there at the side of the truck, when I see that, what is my problem? Well, it may be a training problem there, but now if I don't do anything about that, then it becomes my organizational problem because everybody thinks that's the way you pull a hose line off of Matador load. So you're right, Doug. What I would see us really wanting to concentrate, if I wanted to sit down and take a look at my department and see where are we going to go, where am I lacking, where are my basic needs, I've got to have all the basics done before I can worry about moving to advanced level skills.
And, you know, you jump right to the second component of this gap analysis is identify the priorities and the importance of those. You've got to look at your demographics of your organization very clearly and identify what you need to be training on. You don't need to be doing, you know, major hazmat technician work in a very rural department if you don't have, you know, really that high-level potential for hazmat. One is you're probably not going to have the resources, and two, what's, you know, where's the need? I mean, if you're going to train, you got to focus a lot of energy on that when that's not going to be your predominant, you know, response in your district. So that's kind of the reality check you got to look at is, one, is it cost effective? And I don't necessarily mean money here in cost effectiveness. What's it going to cost you with your people and the time and the proficiency? And I think about how we go about doing this in a risk assessment out in the field or when we're running these calls is you got your high-frequency, high-risk calls. Well, you should be pretty good at those. The ones that we get in trouble with or looking at is, you know, the high-risk but low-frequency, the ones that, you know, could really occur in your district, but you don't do it all the time. And we got to build those skills up to that point.
And I think if you're looking at that under risk assessment, it's very difficult for any fire department to meet all of its hazards. And that goes back to, you know, low frequency type of calls. So when you begin to do that analysis of where's my fire department, and where do I need to direct my training needs, there's no sense in you trying to direct your resources and funds to something you don't have the equipment or the calls for. If you've got that neighboring department that does have that, you build relationships with them. It's called helping each other out, and that's something you've got to identify and it needs assessment.
And you're right. I mean, you've got to learn to play in the same sandbox, so to speak, with everybody. And when you're playing in this arena here, one of the things that you got to look at is what are the critical organizational needs? And you got to focus in on a couple of things. One of it is overall needs of the organization for training and personal needs. You may have a smaller group that may be your officers who are weak, but you got strong firefighters. So you may have to focus in on the personal needs as well as the organizational needs. And we know that we're facing limitations, you know, by the environment and the culture automatically of volunteerism. You know, one of the things I want to jump, long as we're at this point in time, is you brought it up in the get-go. When we start looking at personal needs and the organizational needs, we need to think about our attitudes toward training. Now, my first realistic thought process is, are we doing the type of training we need to be doing? In other words, realism. And is it progressive? Now, we can take real training and train the way we did 30 years ago on 30-year-old tactics. Now, is that going to meet today's training? Absolutely not.
And I don't think it's going to meet today's fire calls either.
And you know, one of the things that we're up against, and we see this time and time again, is people deploying the wrong tactics or the wrong not being able to perform skills. So when we get down into training, it's got to be somewhat realistic.
Well, and I think
progressive, too.
Well, and I think you've said something that I want to hit on, and we begin to talk about motivation of firefighters and motivation to train. I think it values at this point to say we can't use I don't have time to train or I don't have time to be a better officer or I don't have time to be a better firefighter as an excuse for not training. We don't have time. We don't have resources. We can take every moment that we're there at that fire department to train, and sometimes we don't even know that we're training. You can take a opportunity to check an apparatus and be doing training with it. The thing is we've got to be open-eared and open-minded enough to pull that piece of equipment out of the compartment instead of just raising the door and looking at it and say, well, yeah, it's there.
Well, that's a progressive thought process, too. And sometimes we miss that in what we should be doing as training. And when we're looking at the overall picture and looking at this gap analysis, part of our problem could be in identifying our needs is that we're not taking advantage of every opportunity.
Well, and that's the point. And in going in and starting small, and understanding our equipment, knowing exactly how it's used, how it should be used, understanding the basics of, I guess you could say, fire tactics 101, understanding the command and why we should function and operate within a good incident command system and why we should have accountability and why we want to make sure everybody's safe, then take it one step forward and even go through walkthroughs prior to even going into any type of burn building. Do you have to have fire to really train? I know I've had conversations with good friends of mine that say, well, you know, we just don't have enough burn buildings to train in, and, you know, we want to get out here and we want to do that. And I'm saying, you know, wait a minute. You've got the structure. Okay, understand why you don't want to burn in an acquired structure. Completely understand that. But who's to say we can't dry run it through, even pull the hose lines off? It gives us a better understanding of what we're going to do or what we need to be doing, working together as individual teams all for the common goal, following a chain of command.
Absolutely. Now, one thing that I know that I've sat through and I know you sat through, we've been in classes, we've went to training, and the buzzword is, man, this is boring. This is, man, I tell you, this is killing me. Where's the toothpick? So how do you make training interesting and keep it interesting all the time?
Well, and I tell you that, you know, I agree with you. Standing, first off, I cannot stand to read a lesson plan. If we want to have people read a lesson plan, send me the book. You know, it's got to be interactive. It's got to be. Now, look, I'm not saying that we have to have comedians. That's not what I'm looking for. But we've got to have people that are enthusiastic about what they're doing and enthusiastic about the objective we're teaching. You know, now, are there times where there are some classes that are going to be boring? They're going to be boring, and there are some things. I'm sorry, I don't know how in the world you could pretty up hydraulics, okay? I mean, there's some things that you're not going to be able to make comical. However, we've got to reinforce the importance of knowing certain things.
And, you know, a lot of it comes into, you know, making it interesting, being able to pick people that are doing your training. And I know in volunteer departments, you know, an officer will get chosen and say, okay, you know, next week you've got training. They got to come up with something. They got to be a little bit innovative as well in this, and they may not be the best person to teach it. They may not be the best person to maybe coordinate it, but, you know, they're the person to make sure it's getting done. And, you know, getting people in that have real experiences that can share those experiences. And it's got to be multifaceted experiences. And, you know, when instructors come in, and I know that fire departments, you know, in every area that I've ever been to have their favorite instructors. And it's for various numbers of reasons. You know, one of the things that I hope that when people are picking their favorite instructor to come in is not that they let them out, you know, a couple hours early, not that class is supposed to start at 8 o'clock in the morning, it doesn't start at 2:40 in the afternoon, and, you know, they read the slides and say, don't worry, I'll help you through the test, or, you know, the major comedian that comes in. I hope they're choosing instructors and people, and, you know, to do their program that are passionate about the subject. And that's something to think about as, you know, volunteers is when you come in, you can almost always, as the individual sitting in the classroom, set the tone for passion. If you guys truly want to learn and you're asking questions and you interact, that drives the passion of an instructor that's up front, and especially if they're one of these folks that, you know, really want to get down and dirty. And that's what instructors have to do in this training, is get down and dirty. So, you know, coming into a classroom, you got to be real innovative and get the right people. It's got to be interesting. And you hit the nail on the head just a few minutes ago. It's got to be objective driven.
Oh, yeah. It's got to mean something. But, you know, I can put myself, I've been in that position of being that newly appointed volunteer officer and, you know, short time in the fire service, you know, hey, you've got training. You know, the first thing I can understand is, well, you know, that person saying, oh, my gosh, where in the world are my resources? You know, where do I go from here? What do I do? You know, and there's so many available resources now that just weren't even available even 20 years ago. You can literally go on the website. You can go to the firehouse and say, hey, let's pull up what their training topics are. And you can take those by knowing your equipment, by knowing what your department needs to work on or what you think they need to work on, and you can use those objectives. You've got a pretty good little training plan that you can go and work at. you just have to research. You have to research how the equipment operates. Too many times we want to go out here and we just want to go throw a master stream out there on the ground, but we haven't looked at the manufacturer's recommendations on exactly what is set up, what's the angle, those type of things, what's the anchor points. So we've got to research on the manufacturer's operations. We've got to research safety. And then what we've got to do is gear the interest of those firefighters that know us. They know we're the new guy. It just takes a little passion, and I tell you, okay, the first time it might be scary, the second time it might be scary, but what will happen is you'll end up getting pretty good at doing it. If somebody who really wants to see the department grow, passion will go a long way in making a big difference.
Well, you're right. Passion does carry, you know, training to the next level. And, you know, coming up to the fourth component of this is identifying solutions and opportunities. And, you know, we're at that point that I think we ought to take us a break and come back, because we're really going to dive into this. We're going to spend a significant amount of time talking about solutions and opportunities and how to do comprehensive training plans and even alternative training that's out there for alternative resources to help with the scheduling. So we'll be back in just a few short moments. You're listening to Training and Tactics Talk on RadioFirehouse.com.
Radio at Firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
Well, welcome back to Training and Tactics Talk on RadioFirehouse.com. I'm Douglas Klein, and with me today is Philip Russell from the South Carolina Fire Training Academy in Columbia, South Carolina. And we're talking about volunteers and training and trying to move to the next level for volunteers. And we've been talking about doing a gap analysis and some needs assessments. And we're up to the fourth step of identifying some solutions and opportunities. And the first thing I want to throw out is that this is, when you start looking at where you're going and identifying, you know, what your gap is, knowing what you have to get accomplished, knowing what, you know, the problems or the issues may be, you've got to sit down and do a strategic plan. And that's where we fail a lot of times in departments across the United States, career and volunteer, but especially in volunteers, because it's so hard in time to try to sit down and truly develop a strategic plan that's going to move the department's training forward. And that oftentimes, you know, requires some reorganizing or reorganizational processes and restructuring and looking at performance management. And finally, you know, getting down to that effective team building that we're after in training and moving forward. So with that strategic plan and our thought process here, Philip, I know that I've developed, you know, fairly extensive training plans. And I did it in a combination of departments where the majority of my firefighting staff was volunteers. And I took a look at, you know, where do we want to be now? Okay, I'm not there. How am I going to get us to that point and keep us moving forward? So in the strategic plan, I looked at a five-year plan for training based on what I had currently for members in the department. And I set up this elaborate, comprehensive plan that was multifaceted. And, you know, looking at, you know, starting out and, you know, getting our rookies trained to the right level, which meant that they were going every Wednesday night and one Saturday a month, looking at our continuing training and interoperable training as a department. You know, we were broken into two battalions, so you had to have the scheduling, you know, two training sessions. And I built it where it sent forward each time in a progressive manner. So I know that, you know, from a state level, you definitely do strategic planning, you know, on a year to even a 10-year level, because y'all are focused on a much bigger picture than just departments. So throw in some of your thoughts on developing a strategic plan. I know you're involved heavily with a volunteer department around Columbia there, probably about 45 miles, you know, outside of Columbia. Tell me your thoughts on strategic planning for training.
Well, I tell you what, let's revert it back into things that a firefighter can understand, because I think when we scare people off sometime when we start talking about strategic plans. Let's break it down in fire terms. We've got an operational plan, we've got a tactics plan, we got a strategic plan. It's a strategy. The operational is the plan that we're operating on right now, what we're going to do for the next year. The tactics, that's what we want to have done over the next 2 to 3, 4 year period of time. Strategic, our strategy, we're looking at 5 years down the road. Is that strategy, could that strategic goal or strategic plan change? Of course it can. There's a lot of time between today and 5 years down the road. A lot of people don't want to forecast, but we have to forecast in this business. We have to know where we're going, and we've got to go ahead and be facing that direction. Because once 5 year gets here, if we've done nothing at the department, where are we at now? I know, you know, I very good friends of mine, and actually they're in the department that I'm with, and here we are running a department knowing that, you know, in 3, 4 years we're going to have a new fire engine. What do we do? What are the steps? And the good part about it is you bring a bunch of volunteers together and we're all sitting around talking, we're going to have answers on how we're going to get that new truck. Now, maybe some of the answers you get might not be the right one, but all of us together won't be wrong. If we are wrong, we're going to correct ourselves. And it ends up being a very good meeting. Pull everybody together in that department. Pull out the chalk on the chalkboard and say, okay, guys, where are we going to go? What do we need to do? You're getting their input, which puts ownership on it. But again, the strategic goal is 5 years down the road. Sometimes we got to make sure that we've got a functioning operational goal today for operations before we ever get to that point. So through self-analysis, you take care of the big stuff first, and then you begin to forecast your long-range plans. And it can be done, and it's not that hard.
Well, you know, and looking at the way you broke this out, part of the way that I went about doing training in this plan that I put together was, you know, we know that we have to be able to ventilate, you know, structures, whether it be with positive pressure, whether it be with hydraulic ventilation with hose lines, whether it's vertical ventilation, whether it's a combination of all three. You know, any tactic, whether it's, you know, horizontal, vertical, whatever it may be, you know we got to do that. We also know we need to be able to advance hose lines. We have to be able to conduct search and rescue. We have to be able to, you know, effectively control fire. You know, be able to do salvage and overhaul. Be able to, you know, do a sustained water source supply, whether it's with tanker shuttles, whether you happen to have a hydrant in your district, you know, whatever it may be. So when I looked at the plan of what we had to do, I looked, and this will be great for some of the folks out there listening, is I took and worked on some skills. And I would take and say, okay, we need to do ventilation one night. And I'd set up to where you had to do all these skills rotations. And I'm a hands-on type guy. You know, I'll sit in the classroom, I'll tell you the basics, we'll go through that, we'll get that component down, and then it's time to be out there. It's time to put your hands on. So we're out there doing ventilation and, you know, all the skills and practices that go with it. You know, the next time we're together, we're going to incorporate, you know, search and rescue. And you do all these things, and you go through your different searches using, you know, thermal imaging camera, not using thermal imaging camera, you know, maybe searching on a hose line, off a hose line. And, you know, you keep building. Well, after I do 3 or 4 or 5 skills, I come back and I run what I call a scenario-driven exercise. And if you're looking for these people that are trying to meet all these regulations, that's ISO 101. You're doing your firefighter 1 and 2 stuff. The firefighter that's required to get maximum points is 240 hours a year, 20 hours per person a month, and that's almost darn near impossible for volunteers to get. But you also get your drills in. You know, you're required to have so many drills. They got to be night drills, single company drills, multi-company drills. So, you know, you're getting some of this in, and then I move on. I do another component. But here's where it begins to get a little different in this. As they're going along, we added in all the components now in the second drill. So as it goes, it continues to build. Now, this is for the folks that you've already gotten through rookie school, and even those folks that are mixing in and blending, because now, by blending those folks in, they're beginning to learn, even if it's in a smaller capacity. And it just keeps building from there. And, you know, that's one of the ways I address, you know, the training issue. From what I, you know, we get these feet in, how do you get all this training in? That's the biggest question I always get, is how could I accomplish all the training that I'm supposed to accomplish and still get everything else done that I'm supposed to do? We're just volunteers, and you run into time. So I tried to maximize as much as possible in there to get the biggest bang for the buck. And if you look in today's world, you see people talk about the Six Sigma business concept of getting maximum returns on your investment. Well, if you go and you look at a training scenario that's driven, and say you run two scenarios in a three-hour night, and you look at the returns that you're getting on that scenario from just the basic skills you've covered, and where they got to be comprehensive, where it's constantly being pulled forward, especially if you're a department that's not running maybe, you know, 50, 60 working fires a year. I mean, that's just phenomenal there. And I know that when you come to South Carolina to the Fire Academy and to fire academies across the United States, that when they go to the hands-on portion, a lot of it is driven by scenarios. So jump in here, Philip, and tell me a little more.
Well, I want to back up because you were going somewhere that I really like where you were going, and that is we're taking stations, we're breaking down learning into small steps, and then what we're doing is we're taking those steps and we're bringing them together through the scenario process, and we continue to build and continue to build, and you are using that training to meet a standard requirement or a training requirement, number of hours, the night drill, especially for ISO, and what they're looking for is the hours of material that you're going over. But what you're also doing with that is that you are getting them, you've actually taken a needs assessment. I need to get these people to Firefighter 1 and Firefighter 2. And through those training sessions, you are actually building them and getting them that certification. And once you get to the end of Firefighter 1, now what we do is we do the same thing, repeat that same process to Firefighter 2. Once you get through with that, we move into the driver operator, then we move into the fire officer. We're helping people retain and learn and retain good information, and then we're pushing them forward, making them better. And that's the best hope for a strategic training plan that any fire department could have, is that everybody's going to be certified to these levels. And part of getting that certification and making sure everybody understands those individual skills is putting them through scenarios. One of the keys to good training is try to make it as realistic as possible. Now, understand it's a training mode, and training has to be done as safe as possible. There's some times where you got to say, look, you're going to have to envision this because I don't want to put you in that environment for your safety's sake. But by pulling people together and putting them in a scenario, they are literally able, as a group of people, to work together, and they're actually learning together, and they're performing their skills, and it just brings it all together. The more truer it is to life, the more realistic the training becomes to the student, and the more the student understands. It's a great concept.
Well, and the group dynamics is critical when we go into tactical operations on scene. Now, let's go back to what we talked about, attitudes. It's realistic. Now, here's where we run into some of the issues. People say, oh, man, that's too much work. Well, I'm sorry. You know, we've got to do realistic training. If you're not willing to go to that level, then it's time to be looking for a career change. Or, you know, I always say, you know, if you're an officer and you're not willing to use those toilet plungers on your shoulder and do what they mean, well, then you need to step down. And, of course, those toilet plungers, I'm talking about bugles. When you get promoted, there it is. Now, we talk here, Philip, about, you know, making that step and, you know, carrying folks up the line. One of the issues that I face, and I know that a lot of people have, you know, I've talked to across the, you know, United States, and, you know, I've had a couple of emails and things on this, is that, you know, my department is so diversified in levels of training. How do I create this comprehensive plan with, you know, these multitude of levels that I have? And here's where I got to that point. You know, that was a, you know, to me, a very luxurious point to get to, you know, with an organization, is that you have all these different levels and you can begin to work. So in creating this plan that I've created, that I'm encouraging folks to work on, is that once you get people that are at all these levels and they're beginning to, you know, master some of these levels, there's two ways you got to go about it. One, you got to keep moving people forward, and we discussed that. And I know you're all for that, Philip, because that's the realism of training. That's the progressive side that we have.
That is
but
correct.
How do you keep them going? One of the things I did is in a lot of our training, and I go back to those scenarios, is I had officers engaged in certain objectives, trying to raise them to another level. And here's a perfect example of that. If, you know, you're trying to do training, one of the things that I did is I would take my lieutenants, who typically were the folks that were on the line with the crews that were working maybe, I don't know, divisions or sectors or, you know, geographic locations on floors. I would take those people and I'd roll them up to an operations or the incident commander. So what I was doing was expanding that, and then what I did was I bird dogged them or shadowed them. And I put senior officers doing that. So what was happening was we were coaching, we were teaching, we were doing what is lost in the fire service called mentoring. The second part of that was I would take the people that were new officers and really challenge them, you know, put them where they're, you know, having to lead crews, and these people that are at the next level or wanting to be at the next level, put them in the same situation. Now, here's what I did. I ran a promotional process. I just didn't appoint you as an officer. You had to have certain criteria before you could become an officer in my department. I didn't care whether you were career or volunteer. I had more volunteer officers than I did career officers. So I set the criteria. Part of what we ran was an assessment center. And the last assessment center that I ran, I had people that were wanting to be officers in team leader positions, you know, in these crew leader positions, operating, managing crews, the same things that they're going to have to do if they're an officer. And I began evaluating based on the criteria of that officer. So what I've done to this point is I've trained them up to where they should be proficient to operate. Now we're really enhancing those skills. We're driving home the objectives, and we're also, you know, raising the bar and raising the process. And I do this all the way through. Let's talk about that, Philip. I know that you're a big training person. I know that y'all run a multitude of programs. I see your officers come in for officer weekends and for chief officer weekends. Let's talk about this concept. What do you think?
Well, first off, I got to agree with you. The mentoring, it's an expectancy now that somebody who is a good firefighter is going to make a good officer. And I, in many cases, I do believe that a brand spanking new officer is to should be able to perform as well as somebody who has been an officer for 10 or 15 years. And that's not true, because while there might be some book knowledge there, where's the experience to go along with it? I've said for years, the worst thing that we can ever do is to take a good firefighter and put him into officer too soon. That's not going to be the best thing that we need to do to a brand new officer. The other side to that same coin, Doug, is I really believe at times we've got some firefighters who really look at that position and they want the responsibility, or maybe I should say the title of that officer. They want to be an officer very, very bad, but they may not have a total understanding of all the responsibilities that those officers have. So I think mentoring is a good way to accomplish two goals. Number one, making sure there is a level of understanding of responsibilities to that new firefighter. And number two, helping them gain that experience and making things safer and more effective on the fire ground. You know, the whole point of being an officer, no different than being a supervisor, it is your goal to get that that person that you supervise in your position. That should be our goal. where are we going to be? Doug, you and I, neither one are spring chickens, I guess we could say. So, I mean, who's going to take your place? Who's going to take my place in my fire department? You know, we've got to make sure those people are ready to change, to meet the needs of the call volume that we have today. And I think mentoring and education are the two ways we do it. And I'm big on standards. I think that if you're going to be a fire officer and that's what your goal is, don't sit on your laurels and wait till you get voted in. Let's go get the training necessary. Let's go get the certification behind us. Let's prove our knowledge because, again, that helps you better understand the responsibilities of the job.
Well, a thought that just comes to my mind is that, you know, we're talking about all these things, and I know some folks are saying, wow, man, I'm about to get overwhelmed here. I'm going, you know, in the information overload. But let's kind of break it down. It's really simple when you think about it. If you want to develop, you know, your training program, and you got to carry everybody through, say you're at a very low level with your people, very little experience at an officer level, very little experience at a driver level, you know, a whole lot more inexperienced at the firefighter level, you carry them up through all the steps. That's an outstanding way to do it. You accomplish so many things with that. We had it broken out to where you've got, you know, people at all these levels, they're fairly proficient. You try to bump them to the next, and you run a multitude of things at one time. So to bring this into pretty basic concepts here is I may have one program going on at night, but in reality, I'm working on firefighter skills. I've got people working on driver-operator skills. I've got people working at company officer level skills. And I've got people working at command officer skills.
And really what you have, Doug, is you have a team in training.
That's exactly right, Phil. A team in training. Now, here's what people have to do when they develop their training. And this is where a lot of people miss the boat. And I've watched volunteers do this, and when I've come out with this, I've done a program called Training Today's Fire Service, and I've delivered it. And the last place I delivered this was up in the great state of Vermont. And when we got done with this class, these folks were going, wow, I never thought of it that way. But, you know, we can make this happen. And what it is, you've got to write the objectives of your course based on all these different levels. So you've got objectives that you're trying to meet at all four or five levels, whatever you've got set out for that, but it's still one program. So you're not trying to run five different programs one night. You're running one program that has specific job performance requirements or the objectives that you're trying to accomplish, you know, things or tasks that fit there. And you know, here's a resource. A lot of folks, you know, want to shy away from the NFPA standards. Don't do that. That's a perfect way to see exactly what they're supposed to be able to do. And, you know, in reality, I've pulled I don't know how many ideas for drills just simply off of what they're supposed to be able to do. And even the basic components through there.
Well, you know, and I see a lot of people get scared by reading, whether it's an FPA 1001 or whatever other standard it may be. But to be honest with you, we've got to go back and really understand what is that standard anyways. It's called a competency standard. It's what we should know. And that should be our goal. If we're going to be falling within that standard, then that should be what we know. And really, a lot of people that get scared about, well, I won't say scared, but they get concerned about having to go all over all of this information. I think in truth, It should be something that they would want to research and go all the way through it. It ought to be a goal for them. Hey, if I start here, this is where I'm going to end at, and look at what I'm going to know. Again, 1001, what does it really mean? It means what you should know when you put on your turnout gear and you respond to your call, your first call. This is the basic knowledge you should know. But it still gives us a guideline of what our educational level should be and what some of the training drills and training things that we can do to get us where we want to be.
You know, one of the other things is people always ask me, well, what do we train on? Well, you know, one of the things we do in a class is with training the fire service, we start listing topics. So let's throw out some topics here, you know, for our listeners so that they know things you train on. We know you got to train on ladders. We know you got to do ventilation. Got to do your personal protective equipment and SCBA. You got search and rescue. What's a couple more, Philip?
Fire attack, vehicle fires, foam firefighting. You know, and if you want to start and go over the entire 1001, you've got your hazmat awareness and operations levels. I think you even need to add, of course, it's probably not in 1001. It may be debated amongst others with me, but I think firefighter self-rescue and RIC ought to be added right along in there as a means to, hey, we're going to teach you basic skills, but I think a basic skill should be one of those things you learn how to call a mayday should you get in a bad situation.
Well, you know, being a rapid intervention person the way that I am and all the work that I've done through the years on that, and, you know, I couldn't agree more. You know, we've pushed for forever on this. Now, here's something I'm going to throw out. That is basic training in today's fire service, if you think about it.
That's right.
And out of all the rapid intervention classes I've done, you know, and I've been doing rapid intervention since, I guess, what, 93, and I can tell you, the majority of the people that don't go to these classes is a part that we're missing in training, which is our command officers. They don't know how to manage the mayday. And, I mean, it was even so much that managing the mayday became such an issue and such a prevalent, passion that Burton Clark at the National Fire Academy developed a program called Managing the Mayday, and you can even use that, you know, by taking it through the National Fire Academy online. You can get the CD sent to you, and it's free. So,
were talking about resources that were available for training sessions, and that makes a great point, Doug, of additional resources that are available. Going online, National Fire Academy, and getting the Managing or Calling the Mayday program that was written, and that is an awesome program that can really make one great big impact in a fire department.
Well, you know, that dives us right into the final topic that I had, and it's called alternative training. The first thing that people think of with alternative training is, oh, my gosh, you're going to put me on a computer and I'm going to see some boring thing and I'll have to put, you know, my fist down with my hand over so I don't break my nose when my head hits the computer screen. Well, let's think about alternative training in a different sense. And I'll talk a little bit about distance education and online training, but I want to talk about some training that you can get that is very, very simple, that people can do even when they're with their families. Part of it is truly understanding the demographics you live in other words, the community. And as you're going, and you can even capture this if you did it right, you know, and count it for training, is as you go from one place to the other in your district, have you ever really looked at the buildings? Have you ever strategically thought about what are the issues? What are the plans? You know, what would we do if this building caught on fire? What are the problems it presents? And I know that I utilize this, you know, significantly as a career person when I was a captain, you know, on an apparatus. As we returned from alarms and, you know, from different activities we had, we took different routes on purpose, and as we rode through areas, we looked at things and talked about things. Well, you may not, you know, be talking to your wife about this or your girlfriend or your husband or whoever, because they may not even care. But as you're riding through, you know, part of what you can be doing is thinking about, you know, what are the issues here? What would we face? Where's the closest water supply? And that becomes what I call mental mapping. And it's prime recognition decision-making concepts that we need. And
I want to go follow along right in there with you, Doug. You're so correct on that. And too many times, you know, a lot of people say, well, we don't have time to train, et cetera. We don't want to go and take the truck out of service right now. Or even that is cold today or it's hot today. We don't want to go out and train tonight. We just check the trucks. We'll sit around the department. Some of the better training that we've ever had out of my little volunteer fire department is when we pull out our pre-plan book for the businesses that we have, and we put it up on the chalkboard, and we map out a little area with chalk. I mean, it's real high tech here. There's no overhead. There's no fancy computer sitting in there shining at a screen. And we just sit back and plan. Should we have something here, what are we going to do? What is 25% involvement? What is 50% involvement? Now, I'm very fortunate. The volunteer department I'm on, we have standards and criteria for who's on the department. These guys meet the standards, and they really love to train. But they got more out of that at times than any other training we can think of. And it is. It's mental awareness, because then they begin to think about other areas in their community. And one subdivision, one house in a subdivision, normally pretty well represents another one sitting right beside it.
And, you know, the thing that you got to do is capture that. And you can capture it in a lot of ways, and it's got to be documented. I mean, you've got to write it down so that it meets the training requirements and all this, that, and the other. But think about the amount of time that you could get in training in a week's time. You could probably knock out, I don't know, even on your way to work, you could probably knock out an hour and a half, 2 hours of training just in a week's time, just randomly driving, you know, from point A to point B, going through this. And one of the other areas that I utilized is that we took our pre-plans and we made them available. Mm-hmm. And what could happen is, say somebody had an evening where they had an hour to kill before they had to do something. They stopped by the fire station, was hanging out. Well, right there's a perfect training tool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, boom, it's right there for them to look at, the pre-plans. You know, another thing is, how many folks have these training tapes and training DVDs, and, you know, they get American Heat or FETN or some of these programs? It's there. I mean, all you got to do is pick one up. You watch, you know, a 40-minute tape or a 30-minute tape. Killing time, you can take one home. You know, when, you know, you've got a few minutes, you pop it in. Hey, there's another 30 minutes of training, and it's information. It may not meet all the things that I would like to see done as far as hands-on, because, again, you know, I'm a hands-on type person, and I love to, you know, get down and dirty and go do the, you know, the really, really hardcore training, as I call it. But, you know, a lot of times these guys may be working 12, 14 hours a day, depending on, you know, what their situation is, and this is an opportunity, again, to try to get some alternative training.
Well, I think your point, Doug, is very well made. There are some things that you can get a lot of cognitive, some mental awareness about. But there are many skills in the fire service. There's no way to do e-learning on how to pull a hose. There's no way, in my opinion, to do e-learning to be able to put on that turnout gear and that SCBA properly and get that instant feedback that an instructor or somebody who's teaching that class is going to be able to provide to you. But the thing is we've got to be well-rounded. There are times today when, because of time, because of technology, we now have the ability to get online or to watch a DVD. That's adding to what we're going to put our hands on at the department. And I guess our conversation is weighed from both a formal education level versus training at the fire department. And I think you've got to look at it on both sides, because I think that the two are distinctly different, and we're just, you know, talking about options on both sides. But getting that light bulb to come on in that student's head is the most important thing. You know, while I want to see every student pass a test here at this fire academy, and I want to see them excel in their programs, The one thing that I really want to make sure that they do overall is learn. I want to see the light bulb come on, because that's really the true measurement test at the end of the day, is not whether they passed that written test, is whether they were able to perform in a safe and effective manner on that fire ground scene. And any extra percentage of learning that a firefighter is willing to give on his own, he will receive that multifold in his career in the fire service. It's just dedication.
And it is. And I have to, you know, I have to jump in and agree with you 100%. And what we have to do, and you danced all around it, and I'm going to throw the words on it, is we have to maximize our ability to get as much training in every dimension as possible. And that's just bottom line. We've really got to work on this. And, You know, let's throw out a couple alternative training pieces for the folks. We threw out the use of DVDs and PCR tapes, your pre-plans. That's another good one. Mm-hmm. There are online training programs. I know Action Training has a program that you can work with and buy into. There's simulation programs that are out that people can utilize to do simulation. One of the things that I like to utilize, and then I just gave out a CD today to a person in High Point that's you know, going up for promotions and working and enhancing his skills, is for his officer to be able to create scenarios on PowerPoint and use animated fire and smoke to create situations, you know, for the community. Those are real easy. If you made, you know, two or three of those up, people could come in and, you know, what are you going to do? And it's a thought process that you could use. FETN is another opportunity to, you know, have education, you know, via, you know, an internet feed or via satellite feed, you know, into the fire station so that, you know, you have those other alternatives. And it may be that you come up with some type of other lesson plan, or you have other programs that's been done in the fire station and you just videotape them so that people have the ability to watch them. Lots of things that are out there for alternative training. And
I want to throw one more out. Can I throw one more, Doug? I don't mean to interrupt, but because you were doing so well there, buddy. You were just rambling. You had it going, Bo. But one other thing I think is just added extra training for the entire department is go and get every notice for a line of duty death. And go review that with your entire fire department. I don't care if you meet once a month, you meet once a week, you meet every day, whether you're paid or volunteer is immaterial. Read to your department that LODD. It's a lesson learned. We need to remember it in the reverence that it's intended, but there's lessons in those to be learned. If you're not getting those now, I'd urge everybody, you know, get online with USFA, get that where it automatic downloads right to your computer. And we do this with our recruit programs that we do here on site. Every line of duty death, we review that with those recruits. And they're lessons because, you know, we don't want to see it again. Training is the ultimate key, in my opinion, to getting us to change our culture. And I just think it's a little added aspect or a little added training. Doesn't take but a minute to go over it and review it, but it makes a heck of an impact.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, there's two others I want to throw in there, too. So now we're really getting down to the meat of this. Is how about the near-miss program?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the near-miss is just absolutely phenomenal. And you know what? Last year, 477 of them put up. And I'll stand on my soapbox right here and start yelling and screaming. I know that there were more than 477 near-misses. But, you know, people don't know about this. They don't take time to put it up there. And John Tibbett and those folks at the IHEs have done a phenomenal job in being able to capture this information. And you can go in there and see. You know, I've got one up from, when I was the fire chief in Eden. We were within less than an inch of a fatality. The guy almost had his foot on a power line. It was at night. And, you know, one of the things is we knew it was down, but we didn't mark it well. And, you know, my heart dropped when I found this out. You know, I was in a command role, and this came out after, you know, in the post-incident analysis. And it was like, holy cow, I can't believe this. And, of course, the first thing was we got to put this on near miss. We've got to look at it. We've got to change how we do business, you know, right on. So, you know, it's out there. The NOSH reports that are coming out.
Yes.
Man, those are phenomenal reports, along with the line of duty death reports. We've got to use that. Also, the other thing that you threw it out there with the United States Fire Administration and the National Fire Academy. If you want information, say you don't have a lot of these periodicals, Firehouse Magazine for one, and you know, tons of, you know, just information coming out every month. If you got a topic you want, all you got to do is call the Learning Resource Center at the National Fire Academy, request what you want. You've got folks on site in that resource center that will dig that material out. They'll get it copied. They'll get it to you. And guess what? It's free. And I love the concept of free. You know, lots of things there, Philip. You got anything else you want to throw in for our audience that's listening out there?
Well, I think the one thing that I want to end with, Doug, is the first thing that we started with. We're all professionals in this business. Doesn't matter whether we get a paycheck at the end of the week or we don't. We're all doing the same job. We all fight the same fires, and fire will kill us just as equally, regardless of rank or regardless of status in the department. And the key to us being a better department, responding better, better taking care of our customers, better doing the job, minimizing damage, the better public education is done if we have good training. And, you know, it's a well-rounded ball or a spear if you'll look at it, and a small part of that spear is actually the response. What do we do the rest of the 90 to 95% of our time at our fire department? Well, we can make plenty of excuses for what we're not getting done, but we've got to train. Yes, I know we all have the inspections that have to be done. Yes, I'm aware that we all have to have paperwork that's got to be kept up. We've got to check trucks. We've got to do truck maintenance. We've got to do building maintenance. I know all of that's got to be done. But, you know, you do what you want to do in this business. And if we'll put training as our top percentage point, I think what we'll find is everything else, from the maintenance of our equipment to the responding calls that we'll do, will all fall into place and we'll be better.
I agree, Philip. I really do. Well, I hope that our listeners have enjoyed the program. If they've got any questions or comments that they would like to know more about this or talk more about training, they can email us at radio@firehouse.com. And, you know, we can talk more about this in the future. And, of course, Philip, you know, at the South Carolina State Fire Training Academy in Columbia, they can contact me at the High Point Fire Department here in North Carolina in the training division. You know, it's just a great opportunity. We'll be glad to share anything we can. We appreciate you joining in to Training and Tactics Talk as we focus on our volunteer firefighters across the United States and training as a whole. And, of course, you know, our career folks can take this training and run with it as well. But we appreciate you coming in, and thanks for tuning in to Training and Tactics Talk at RadioFirehouse.com. I'm Douglas Klein. Until next time, stay safe.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to Firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these. Or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.